This podcast explores the spiritual and metaphysical world through the experiences and opinions of the host and those interviewed, and therefore should not necessarily be seen as direct endorsement or personal advice to our listeners. We encourage you to use your own discretion, judgment, and intuition regarding anything you learn of through this show.
I'm Renata Maniachi, and this is Let's Get Metaphysical.
In this episode, Ren interviews healer and activist Rochelle Faithful.
Rochelle Faithful is a multidisciplinary folk healing artist and healing justice practitioner rooted in the African diasporic tradition of conjure. They were born in Washington, D.C. and raised in Virginia with a strong affinity to their southern family line in Georgia, Alabama, and Texas. Faithful supports national and local activists of all backgrounds, particularly leaders of Black liberation movements. They are known for creating spaces to help activists identify and process trauma and invest into healing justice frameworks. Their work has been featured in national publications, including in Color Lines, The Root, Everyday Feminism, HuffPost, and others. They have also published in several books and law review articles, such as Outside the XY, Queer Black and Brown Masculinity, Land Justice, Reimagining Land, Food, and the Commons, and the forthcoming anthology, Black Trans Love is Black Trans Wealth. Faithful is one-third of the Oxalix Collective, a healing collective that supports activists and publishes Tonic, a healing advice podcast. They are the former shaman in residence at Freed Body Works, and before initiation, they were a healing-oriented community organizer and people's lawyer, which they incorporate into their role as a village healer today. Rochelle and I met a few years ago when our paths crossed at Freed Body Works, a holistic wellness center in Southeast DC. At that time, we authored an article together for the Pathways magazine about the next generation of healers being brought up. I've been so looking forward to interviewing Rochelle and sharing their unique take on their work and shamanic tradition. So, are you ready? Then let's get meta.
We're here today with Rochelle Faithful. Welcome, Rochelle.
Hey, glad to be here.
Rochelle and I met several years ago through working at Freed Body Works. They have many talents, and today we are here to talk primarily about shamanism, but we may get into some other amazing things that Rochelle is involved with as well. So Rochelle, I always ask folks at the beginning of the interview to please tell us an experience that you've had that you may consider metaphysical in nature.
The memory that comes to mind was during my shamanic foundations training. That was a number of years ago now. We were about a third of the way through the course, which was like 9 months of birthing ourselves through this process. And this particular course, I was paired up with a person I'd never been paired before. And I was in an apprenticeship of about 10 people. And this person was a very gifted medium, like channeler, more of a clairaudient channeler. And we had been paired before. And our work this time was around doing life purpose drum work together. So we had learned a particular technique to use the drum and be able to channel, in whichever ways we channel, guidance to our partner. Mm. So we were tasked with doing that at this farm where we were doing the training, and we went into the woods into a corner. And as soon as we got out, I was feeling a lot of energetic presence. And At this point, I was aware about my own experience with energetics. I also had some training and some energy healing already as I was entering into this shamanic path and folk healing path. But I had a strange kind of sense that there was a lot of presence around us. And this person who was a channeler was hearing a particular person and was actually asking them, and this was a great example of boundary setting in the metaphysical world, asking them to wait that they could have our attention after we'd done the exercise. So we begin to do the exercise and she was working on me, but they were so insistent and she couldn't ignore them any longer. And finally, she's like, what's going on? And she learned two things. One, the presence that was around was ancestral for me. And she was able to describe for the first time And I guess she must have been clairvoyant as well, because she was able to see them. And she was able to describe these ancestors of mine who were African-American and who were on horses. And they described themselves as being from North Carolina and being guardians to help explain to me some of this life purpose pieces, big pieces that I had been seeking for the past number of months, but had no idea that I would have such a kind of explicit and direct experience with ancestors to tell me what the deal was. So she spent like an hour channeling for me what essentially the path I am now, which is integrating these roles I have as spirit worker and these roles I have as a healing force in other relationships in the world. They were channeling all that to me at the time. I'm really focusing though on the shamanic piece, which I hadn't entered into yet. Mm. And it's one of those things that's just kind of heart blowing. You don't even have words to quite describe it. And it seems surreal, right? Because I have with this channeler who's really just kind of killing me softly, like telling me my entire life, both my past, my present, and the future. What made this even more significant though, was this second part, which is after we finished and I did some work for her, which felt important, but a little less consequential given the kind of really otherworldly experience we had just had together. But when we were leaving to return back to the group, because we were aware that we were really late, but my teacher later explained, like, I didn't disturb you all, I knew important things were happening, is that she was bothered by another presence. And this presence was a lost soul who explained had been murdered on the land, specifically had been lynched on the land, and needed our combined help to reach peace and be able to join his family. Wow. So she was able to, because her clear audience was much stronger than mine at the time, she was able to channel what his direction. I was able to feel him, and he needed apparently my essence and life force to be able to, and my kind of conduit of energy, to be able to make the transition. So we were standing in front of this tree and I was feeling this entity like consensually like kind of enter into my field and my body, my physical body, and like move through. And I was like shaking a little bit, but I mostly was just aware of this energy like literally moving through me up like through my feet and out through my head.
Wow.
And that was demonstrative of the work I was being asked to do, right? So they told me what was going to be done and then had me experience it, which was a lot. And I'm infinitely grateful because that was a moment where I had a lot of skepticism still and doubt about what this all was. And after an experience like that, you can continue to deny it or continue to hold doubt. But for me, I was like, okay, it was lived through. And for me, that's pretty definitive. So that was, I think, my first metaphysical experience of which I was aware and was profoundly changed my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad you brought up this happened to me. I have to kind of believe it now, part of this, because we talk about this a lot on this podcast. People have these experiences all the time, but there are people that choose to not believe that they happened, to ignore their own felt and seen experiences. And just for our listeners, clairaudient means clear hearing. So hearing things on a level that maybe most people can't. And clairvoyant, again, is clear seeing. So maybe seeing on a level that most people cannot. That's an incredible experience. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm curious to clarify, the spirit, this lost soul, was using your energy field to move up to the next level that they needed to be at.
Right. Because he had died in violence. And the story, which I didn't elaborate on, but we'll just mention briefly, was that he explained he was with his family, his child and his wife, and he was approached by a mob of people, white people in particular. And I don't know what the accusation was, but they took him and they lynched him on a tree on that land, and his wife and child experienced it all. So they had been able to see through and live through their lives and transition more peacefully than him, but he was stuck on that land because of the violence and nature of his death. So he needed someone's energy and my energy in particular to help him leave that actual place on the land.
Right. Wow. That's fascinating. My next question is to ask you, what is a shaman and how does shamanism work? And with what you just told us, is this something that you continue, to help, you know, lost souls or other kind of energies to transition to different places?
Yes, this is part of my life now. And these days I identify as a shaman as well as a folk healer, folk healing artist, a medicine person, or a spirit worker. And I use all of those terms because it helps, I think, describe a less established or well-known shamanic tradition from which I come, which is Conjure. I explained that shamanic traditions exist in all cultures, and it's just the traditional ways we use medicine to heal ourselves holistically. And that can extend from herbalism, and in Conjure it's called root work, to healing with spirits, right? And that can often happen with ceremony in some traditions or ritual, which is more common in Conjure. So these very intentional spaces where you're communicating, connecting, contacting with some form of spiritual energy or spiritual essence toward healing. So as I mentioned, I am based in the Conjure tradition, also known as hoodoo. It's very confused in the United States with voodoo, which is another shamanic tradition in Haiti, mostly rooted in Haiti, but it is an African diasporic tradition that came from Africa to the Americas. In the Turtle Island, the particular places where Conjure was most developed were where the slave ports were, in like Louisiana, in New Orleans, in Richmond, Virginia, and also in like the North Carolina-Georgia border, where actually there's it's still a really vibrant community, the Gullah Geechee people, who are more direct descendants, who practice and still retain a lot of the old ways. Conjure is, to me, the traditional ways of healing that were brought through the diaspora, practiced by enslaved people, and also preserved by enslaved people through the present. So to me, it's a really rich legacy, which often is not identified as a shamanic tradition, even though it has all of the elements of one, that includes that kind of level of spirit work, as well as different kinds of using nature to heal. I don't think it's honored as a shamanic tradition because it's actually practiced by Black folk, and it was practiced by Black folk who were captives, right, or held in chattel slavery. So for me, it's very intentional to not only work from shamanic tradition of my bloodline, but it's also a reclamation process to say, like, yes, this is a shamanic tradition. Yes, it's powerful in its own way. And to me, it's distinctly powerful because it was practiced by people who were literally captive and somehow survived into present day, of which I'm a descendant.
What was your introduction into Conjure? When did this arrive in your life?
So Conjure is not something I grew up with. And there are some Black descendants of many generations in the United States who either never heard of Conjure or have these really scary connotations of it. For me, I grew up more in a kind of deist household, that my mom had an appreciation for energy. My dad did come from a Christian background, but it was less orthodox. And he was even raised by a grandmother in the Christian Science tradition. So at least in that tradition, there's an understanding of the ways of the power of healing through spirit. So that was some of my upbringing, but I rediscovered Conjure through reading, actually, as I was going through the Shamanic Foundations course. Because it's like, there has to be a tradition in my bloodline that is not, that's even closer than that of some of the traditions of West Africa in particular. So I did find it, but I had to find it not, again, looking for shamanic practices. I had to look for folk healing. So that is a term that I also reclaim and embrace. It is just the healing of everyday folk. And there's something, too, about the intentional hiding of this tradition to me, which is both powerful, but also I think we're in a moment where it's important for it to be visible and known, to remove some of the shame of it. But it's one that there's some academic literature on, which is interesting. So there's some scholars like Yvonne Chiru, who's based in Swarthmore, who's a theologian and also a practitioner who's preserved a lot of some of the records they have from the post-Reconstruction era records of interviews with people where Conjure was still really present and alive for folks. So she's taken, I think, a lot of those records and I think done a really great job of understanding them and putting them in a context that we can understand now. And there are plenty of others. But because Conjure was practiced secretly and also because it was so deeply misunderstood, it wasn't really well preserved. So there are other practitioners in the country, many of whom are actually in California. And there is interesting debates about new Conjure, which many people on the West Coast practice, and old Conjure, which is more still based in the Deep South. But my reading of this has been as helpful to help me understand some of the more direct ancestors, what they have been sharing with me and what they know. I've learned that I'm connected and have relationships with other kinds of guides, but they were my first and they continue to be, I think, my strongest relationships in this work. But it took me actually some intentional work to rediscover this tradition. And I have a lot of gratitude for the archivists who allowed me to reconnect.
I've known you for a little bit now, and I didn't realize how much work that you had to do to kind of reconnect with this line that you resonate with deeply, and that it was, you know, intentionally kind of hidden from view. How have you seen that your flavor of folk healing and shamanism and Conjure, how have you seen that be helpful for folks and for whom?
I feel like I have the privilege of helping a lot of intersections of people. And I feel like my role will continue to always be evolving in terms of who and how. It's a process that both allows me to have, I think, a sense of perspective shamanically, which is really important. So because Conjure was developed by enslaved Africans who were on this territory, it is a very eclectic tradition. So it draws from the African diaspora, but also integrates a lot of like East Asian philosophies and deities. It incorporates some Hinduism. It even has some like different European and even Jewish, because a lot of Jewish folks did help preserve the tradition. And there's some of these traditions got integrated, right? So many parts of these traditions are also mystical parts of the traditions that got imported and integrated, but its traditional Conjure is actually very eclectic in the same ways that I see just the African-American experience. It's very eclectic. That said, I consider myself kind of a new conjurer, a person who is taking some of the old technologies I've either like experienced firsthand by offering one-on-one support with folks, or I've learned in ceremony and ritual, or learned in my own practice, or received this guidance around, and really try to understand the context it works for us now. So I think in a one-on-one capacity, I've been able to connect people to their own guides who can offer guidance about purpose and transitions and making sense of past life lessons, and healing of the heart is a big one. That work is so important to me. And I think it's an upgrade of some of the traditional ways people have understood Conjure, which is more like spell making for love or spell making for a happy home. Those things are important. And if we understand the context this was happening in, that made a lot of sense, right? Conjure was and continues to be a shamanic tradition for the essentials. At the same time, to me, part of the elevation of Conjure now is really trying to understand and connect to what I think are the modern spiritual ailments that we face, right? So it's not only addressing kind of what we're experiencing on the individual levels, but really looking at the shadows of us culturally and societally. So my work today I definitely do traditional spirit worker work. So I am taking people through forms of journey, and I'm doing a house cleansing for someone this week, and that kind of more traditional role of medicine person. And I'm a person who is showing up in social justice movement spaces and often at the healing justice intersections that has been emerging, and really helping people curate and hold intentional containers around healing. That is a spirit worker role in a way, because it's sacred space holding, and it allows me to integrate some other tools as a facilitator, as a person who's getting more skilled at conflict transformation, as a person who is familiar with social justice organizing and seeing the ways in which we're misunderstanding even how we are coming together and how we're relating to each other to impact the external world. So helping us just build relationships better, as well as like even kind of our understanding of our work. How do we create an affirmative vision that allows us to honor nonviolence and honor transformation and honor cultural changes as well as political changes in the work that we do? And even just trying to get a conception around it, which I feel like as someone who's just deeply intuitive, right, can do uniquely, knowing that there's just more presence around us and drawing from all the intelligence that surrounds us. So I enjoy it. I enjoy being a traditional spirit worker, and I enjoy using other skills and parts of myself to really integrate that for many of us. And it's been a joy too to be just a person who's holding ancestral energy in activist spaces. So it's a lot of things, but it's all the parts of me, and I suspect it's mirroring all the parts of us.
It's an incredibly unique way of sharing your gifts that you're doing that seems like very authentic and like tailor-made for you. I know several folks who are in shamanic traditions, and traditionally I hear them working with folks one-on-one, as you do, or in a sense of maybe a plant medicine sense where a shaman leads a group, maybe through a journey of some sort. But this way that you're talking about, that how you're using your gifts to help, like you said, various intersections of folks in workspaces and in activist spaces is something that I haven't heard of before, knowing that you have been doing this for the community here in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas. And I think it's completely genius, frankly, and also needed. And I'm wondering, I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm generally wondering if any other practitioners, energy workers, shamanic workers are using their talents in such a way in a more public sphere and using their talents and their magic to help people in these different intersections of in the discourse of what's going on in our country right now. Have you heard of anybody else doing kind of what you're doing? And actually, I would also love for you to go in just a little bit to tell our listeners kind of what other things you're working in right now. I know you have a podcast as well and work with a group collective. So I'm interested in that.
Thank you. I always assume that there are others like me. So, but it is a matter of being in relationship with them and knowing who they are. So I am increasingly meeting people who are asking that question, and in probably more the beginning stages of that integration, because they might be, say, like social workers and therapists in the daytime, and then they've been initiated into a tradition and do that in the nighttime, and they're finding a way to bring everything together. And I have just been, I think, uniquely positioned and privileged to be able to do that. And it's been a process, as you've seen. It's been like a 2-year process to figure out like, okay, I have like a strong enough foundation and set of skills as a spirit worker that I can integrate it. But I did have to spend that time and study, right? And continue to study and learn.
As we all do.
Right?
To find the next paths in our way, yeah.
Right, but I think there's something to the idea of being in some form of mastery or at a certain level before you actually begin to really play with it. And what's been unique about Conjure, and I think maybe unlike some other traditions, is that because there's so little documented to draw on, there's been a lot of, like I said, kind of birthing and creating through guidance with myself and other peers. So I'm grateful that my role is to be more integrated, and that's part of my own medicine to share. And I know there must be others. And right now, I think I'm happy to share about some other aspects of work. I am part of the Oxalis Collective, which is a 3-person healing collective, including me, my colleague, Karen L. Culpepper, who you also know, who's a clinical herbalist, and a soon-to-be founder of an apothecary, as well as having other gifts, and Miriam Perez, who is a body worker and I think budding horticulturist, but also really gifted, I think, around mindfulness. And we have combined our skills together to create healing supports for activists. And that's looked like webinars, and it's also helped. It's been retreat spaces, but also we serve like kind of I think we do a good job of helping activist groups identify where their imbalances are. In terms of wellness, that can intersect with organizational and structural issues and allow pathways for them, right, to really navigate them and understand how to create a culture of wellness. Because that's our goal, right? Like, I am not that interested in coming into a conflict transformation process to just resolve the conflict, right? The goal really is to move towards an affirmative culture that supports and sustains us differently. And often requires a reimagining that can be like a doula process. So a lot of my work these days is centering more around these conflict transformation processes. I've been called in quite a bit in DC to do that. And I'm glad to, and I'm learning a lot. And it's calling on my other skills as well as a facilitator to do that. And like I said, there's always a spirit worker element for me around that, because we're creating sacred space to resolve these relationships that have been strained or hurt or broken in some cases. And I think the edge of my work, some of my kind of one-on-one support that I offered is happening through our podcast, Tonic, a healing advice podcast with Karen and Perez. So I've been enjoying like learning how to support someone offline and then bring the medicine online to be broadcast to others. And the other edge of my work is around, I've evolved from thinking about healing, even in a group sense, to what I call healing creation, which is creating a healing experience for folks. So it's much more experientially based. And even from there, I'm evolving to thinking about what it means to be kind of a village healer. So that means taking residence within an organization to really do these different levels of healing, right? Helping people individually, even with like wellness planning, to helping the group through communication or conflict transformation, and then helping them structurally to really understand what they can put into place to allow them to do, to be the way they want to be with one another. So I'm experimenting with that. And on a more individual level, what it looks like to be a village healer, where I can dissolve the transaction economies that we have and allow people to do more of a kind of a tithing support system for me to be available for them month to month. So I think I'm going to begin experimenting with that soon. So that's accessible for people, but also allows me to do the work. So I'm just grateful that there are people that are seeking out these levels of deeper intergenerational healing and allowing me to do it at all different levels, even if they may not understand the vision yet. But that's the edge of my work. Another exciting area of work for me, in addition to conflict transformation, has been supporting white identified folks in their healing so that they can not only be more whole themselves, but also be in better solidarity with others, particularly movements for Black liberation. So I experimented by starting an online experience called Human Ecology of Racism, called HER. I know, Ren, you're a part of it, which is awesome. And it's been a real beautiful learning for all of us, I think, around how we can really get to like really anti-racism 5.0, which is really understanding a theory of change around the disconnection and loss, actually, that a lot of white folks have experienced in their identity and placemaking, allowing them to reconnect. Also, right, like the incentive to buy into toxic white culture, right, elements of whiteness that are toxic. So what we're creating there here is like a very intentional process to think about that theory of change, look at what we're relearning, getting into our shadows. We're moving on to the second half of the course that really looks at what does embodiment and presence look like? What are the ways of culture that actually serve our interbeing? And how we can really incorporate that into our lives very deeply, like at heart and soul levels. So that's a journey that I've been enlivened by. It's work that I feel like I'm able to do, and it's of service for all of us. And I invite folks who are interested in the course to check it out. And they can do that and look at my other work on my website, which is my name, RochelleFaithful.com. I keep that pretty updated. The edge work that I mentioned, I haven't put up yet. But HER is there, Human Ecology, Racism, and Healing Curation is there.
I really
appreciate the way that you've been setting up how you can work with people and how, and the ways that people can support you, like what you were saying about tithing. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot and something that I haven't seen before. I've really watched you over the last couple of years figure out how folks from different backgrounds can access your support and your gifts. And it's really been eye-opening. And I think that a lot of the things that you're doing are revolutionary and the way of the future in terms of how you're sharing your gifts. Is there anything else that is coming up right now for you that you'd like to share?
I don't think so. I think that's a good introduction for folks. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Rochelle, thank you so much for making the time to meet with me today. I really appreciate the work that you do, and I appreciate how you were able to share it with us today.
Truly a pleasure, and congratulations on your new podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm so inspired by the way Rochelle blends their tradition with modern day activism and social justice. It was a pleasure hearing about the exciting ways Rochelle and their colleagues are reaching out to people.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information about Rochelle and their work, visit rochellefaithful.com. In our next episode, Ren interviews hypnotherapist Courtney Starkey. If you're enjoying Let's Get Metaphysical and want to help us keep making new episodes, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/letsgetmeta. This show is entirely listener supported, and we appreciate all the help from our patrons so far as we continue to make our first season of shows. Let's Get Meta is a production of the HANA Healing Arts Network. The show's host is Renata Maniacci. Audio editing and production by Zoe Ravenwood of Hatfish Digital Media. The voice of the credits is me, Aries. Thanks so much for listening.
I love her show.
That sound mostly human. Cool.
Convincingly not a robo-droid.
I don't know why I get so weird.